Well, welcome back to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. I'm here with producer Phil, as always, on the ones and twos, even though I don't know what that means. I'll have to ask Jason Williams. But I'm not here with Sherry Coolidge today. She is somewhere out west, I think Palm Springs, having a, you know, the start of her birthday month celebration. But we have a very capable co-host today, guest co-host, the one, the only, Catherine Nero.
So exciting. I'm so excited to be filling Sherry's very fashionable shoes.
So Catherine, as you know, for a while was a bona fide Enquirer employee, doing all kinds of fun things for us. Moved on. We all were sad, but excited.
I believe you called me a traitor, Burl.
Would have been a traitor if you went, you know, back to competitor. But you're working now. Tell us a little bit about where you are.
Yeah, I'm at Game Day Communications, which is a PR firm that does basically communications for all kinds of fun stuff, including all the big festivals and events, happening around Cincinnati, Blink and Taste of Cincinnati, and, you know, all kinds of fun clients. And today I was talking about pies and bourbon, so I'm not going to complain, not one bit.
I think that's a good day.
Yeah.
Game Day Communications started out promoting a lot of the sports and athletic related events. If you do the Flying Pig Marathon, you know all about Game Day Communications. Jackie Rowe and Betsy Ross.
Legends,
both in PR and the broadcast world, put together a great team, and you're on that team. So I'm kind of excited for you, and because we are a Game Day client as
well. That's right.
For Women of the Year and other endeavors, we still have access to you.
I'm so glad too. It's always nice coming back.
So, I would have, if Sherry's gone and I need a guest host, you're going to be on the short list, obviously, but.
Wait, is that a height joke? The short list? No? Okay. Just checking.
I should not be making height jokes, of all people.
But if you are, making one to me is a good choice.
I would not do that. I would have called you up anyway, asked the favor. Can you, join the podcast? But it's very timely because it's October. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month. I'm wrapping up my Real Men Wear Pink campaign in the waning days of the month. I am wearing pink today. So if you're listening and you want to support breast cancer research and early detection and everything like that, you can go online, search Real Men Wear Pink Cincinnati, and you'll see the landing page. You'll see all the men wearing pink, including Cincinnati Fire Chief Michael Washington, Cincinnati Police Captain Steve Saunders, former Bengals great David Fulcher, all these big heavy hitters, and then me. But I'm doing well. I think I'm in the top five so far.
Excellent.
Until Dean Gregory has his cigar dinner.
That's a tough one to compete with.
Yes, we are actually recording this on a Wednesday, and Wednesday night is going to be his cigar dinner, all the proceeds going to Real Men Wear Pink, and I think I'll get bumped out of the top five.
Likely.
But if anyone wants to help my cause, just click on my little face, and you can make a donation. All the money goes to the American Cancer Society, not just for research, but for education, because early detection is the key. Mm-hmm. And Catherine, about a year or so ago, you were diagnosed and you made the decision to be very public about it using your platforms, your various platforms, not just the Enquirer at the time, but Catherine Nero Inc.
Yes.
Your billions of followers on social media. How did that journey go for you?
Well, it was almost exactly a year ago. So I've actually had breast cancer twice, once in 2012 when I also went public with it. And for the same reason, went public with it in 2021. It was summer of last year, and I had surgery September of last year. And the reason was I just felt like it wasn't something that I needed to keep secret. I certainly didn't want to be, you know, like a spokesperson for breast cancer. But at the same time, the steps that I took, I believe, saved my life. And I think that if not for doctors who were willing to listen to me, be kind of crazy, and also push for further tests and such, that, you know, who knows, I might not be here. And so it's very important to me to remind people that we are, especially women, we are in charge of our own health. And if we don't think we're getting the right care, we need to go find it. So briefly, I had this premonition. I know it sounds weird, but I always thought I would have breast cancer. I was in my 30s, and I'm like, I need to have a mammogram. And my OBGYN was like, you have literally no risk factors, like nothing. And I'm like, I know, but let me just have one. First mammogram was fine, but it was my baseline mammogram, and that's important because the second time I had a mammogram, or the third time, that's when they found a tumor. I had felt it. I went in and got it checked, and again, I was 38 years old. I mean, there's no reason I should have had any sort of – there's no reason – I'm too young. I don't have any family history, no genetic markers, none of those things. And so, yeah, it was important for me to let women know that you don't have to have risk factors to be diagnosed, and it is in our own hands.
So I think not only were you the perfect choice today because it's October, but our guest today – is Michelle Young. And for those who don't know Michelle Young, she is a attorney. She does a lot of pro bono work, and she was diagnosed in 2018 and learned that her tumor was probably present 12 years or in 2012. Mm-hmm. So something that when you talk about early diagnosis being the key, she wasn't diagnosed until almost 6 years after the cancer was probably present because of dense breast tissue, and went on a campaign to change the law in Ohio so that not only is it a requirement for women who are high risk with dense breast tissue to be notified, that the insurance industry, which does cover most mammograms, can cover the diagnose or can cover the screenings that are required for somebody who's in that situation. So we're going to talk to Michelle. She has a great story to share. So let's just jump into the guest segment right now. All right, we are back with special guest. We're so excited. Michelle Young is here. We're going to talk about her work to pass House Bill 371. But first, Michelle, we need a little bit about you, the Michelle Young story. So I'll get you started. I know that you are a native New Yorker. I know that you are the daughter of two public school teachers, and you went and got a law degree and somehow ended up in Cincinnati. Can you fill us in on a little bit of those details?
Sure. I was born in Brooklyn, and my parents care deeply about social justice, and my father taught in Bedford Stuy. I started Georgetown Law School in the evening, and I took a Greyhound bus here to interview with George Edwards, who was a pioneering judge on civil rights law. And I came never – I had never been to the Midwest. I was a New Yorker who – I mean, I lived in Washington, but you thought there was just this big area between the two coasts.
That is very true, having worked in Washington for 6 years. Yeah. There is that kind of blind spot to the
fly
rest of
over.
The country, right?
Yeah, fly over. So
it's a thing.
I came here, and I fell in love with Greg Young, who I've been married to now for 31 years, who is – sweet, kind, total Cincinnati, and in love with everything from the Bengals to UDF ice cream. And so I came back and raised five kids and made this town my own.
Sometimes, because I think we're all transplants here, so when you come from out of town, it's hard to kind of get in with those Cincinnati folks sometimes. It helps when you have a significant other. Did you find that at all, or did you hit the ground running?
Well, I'd probably say I'm still not a Cincinnatian. Mm-hmm. My kids are, and they love this town. But I understand that if you're 3 to 4 or 5 generations in this town, it's hard to open your arms to someone who's new.
You're exactly right. I got told I wasn't Cincinnati enough because I'd only been here like 25 years. So I'm like, how long do I have to be here? How long is it?
I think even if you're not born here, if you manage to go to high school here,
yeah,
that kind of cements the deal a little bit because you can actually answer the question, where'd you go to school?
There's probably like a flow chart at some point, like how it works. Yeah.
So in addition to five kids, you also were integral in launching the law firm, correct?
Well, no, actually Greg's – well, there's two law firms. But Greg's law firm, let me tell you a little. Greg's had a law firm that – now he is True Cincinnati. It's third generation and it's Greg's law firm. And I started to join him when I was raising the kids. Several years ago, with children, you really couldn't work in other firms and start my practice. Then I started my own firm really to take on the pro bono cases. And it's a firm that's intended to basically, if I make anything, I throw it right back towards working on things like breast cancer. So for me, let me tell you all the things I love about Cincinnati, beyond my husband, my children, and my life here. And one of them is that we're a can-do city. And I have, although I am still not a Cincinnatian, I've been able to work on so many wonderful projects in the city. So many efforts from helping helping the first Asian American become our coroner, to working towards a crime lab, to creating the first interfaith camp with other leaders, to right now we have a African-American and Jewish table of friendship that we started with the AJC. In every area where you go in the city, there seems to be an opening that if you're civic-minded to do good, and while I may not totally be accepted as a Cincinnatian, my spirit, I would call it, is in the spirit of Cincinnatus, because this is a city where you can keep on giving, contributing, making a difference, and really being greeted with open arms, and then going on to the next project.
Well, I would say you're accepted, Michelle. I don't know.
We give you two thumbs up.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. You tell me who gives you a hard time, and we'll have a discussion with them.
Okay.
So speaking of the civic work that you've done, you started a mission to change Ohio law, and it's directly tied to a very personal experience with you. Let's start talking about that. Talking about the journey to getting House Bill 371 passed.
Thank you. Well, in 2018, I have dense breast. I thought I was healthy. One day, I noticed a puffiness in my breast, so I asked for a mammogram. Mm-hmm. Took a couple of weeks from when I asked. Wasn't taken seriously. I was considered low risk, whatever that means, since 85% of women have it. And I found out in a short amount of time that A, I had breast cancer, and then by the time I looked this up, by the time we were done testing me because we were getting me ready for breast surgery. We took MRIs and more. There was a recognition I was stage four. Mm. And on October 17th, I'll mention this, 4 years ago, I was told that all bets were off. The operation was canceled. And my internist told me to go through my bucket list. And so I met with the doctor, which was Dr. Elise Lauer, who is wonderful, and the former head of the Cincinnati Breast Cancer at the Barrett Center. And I said, how'd this happen? She said, well, you have dense breasts. It happens all the time. And I said, well, why do we allow this to happen? She goes, it's a wrong, and it's an evil. She said, people are dying, like you, actually. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, we're going to change this. And I said, we'll save my life, and we'll change the law. And I had about 100 chance at the time.
One in 100?
Going into complete remission, and one in two of dying within 3 years. So I did check out our plan of me living at three different medical centers, mm-hmm. Dana, Stanford, and MSK, Sloan Kettering. And two said, bucket list. and Dr. Sledge at Stanford said, let's wait and see. And so I decided to be treated aggressively and to save my life. 1 year from the date, I'm going to mention this for another reason, 1 year from the date, on September 17th. The doctor slide said, I guess it's time to treat. You seem to be in remission. So complete remission.
Wow.
So I had the operation scheduled exactly 1 year from the date it was canceled. And then I went on to where I am today. And I'd say I'm a unicorn in terms of survival. And in some ways, I would consider it a miracle.
Where did you have your treatment?
Mostly UC, but I also go to Stanford. I also check in at all the major institutions since I should not be alive. So I check in at MSK. I plan to check in more, which is good because I've actually met with the giants of the field, and I can tell you there's really good news about breast cancer, and we'll get to that. So anyway, when I was told, and please stop me in my story, so when this happened, and we didn't know if I would live, you've had breast cancer, and I mm-hmm. assure you that breast cancer at the late stages, you don't look very good. You look like you're dying. Oh, my God. We put together our team, and the team included Elise Lauer, of course, Dr. Mahoney, who's a radiologist, and Dr. Annie Brown of UC. And we also brought in, because we need bipartisanship, mm-hmm. Cedric Denson, Representative Cedric Denson, and Gene Schmidt. And that was our dream team. And UC for its lobbying team with us, too, so I have to bring that in.
So let's just take a step back. The dream team was to change law or to address...
Here's how I thought it, okay? And I'm going to tell you, I'll give you, if we can do this in a half an hour, I'll give you my three plan and how we end breast cancer together, the three of us, in the next year to 2 years. It's doable. So the first step, okay, is every woman should have a right to be seen by 21st century accessible technology so breast cancer can be found. My breast, okay, is dense tissue. Well, dense tissue cannot be seen on a mammogram. It's like trying to catch a snowflake and a snowflake. And get this, because I just checked on this. Last night with Dr. Sammarco, who's an engineer, mm-hmm. and she explained. She said, well, one of the reasons is that the tumor is very dense. So the bigger my tumor got, the harder it is to see. And dense tissue is dense. That's why it's called dense. So if you have a big tumor or growing tumor and you have dense tissue, it can be missed on the mammogram, as was my case.
And now, so what – before – well, when this was going on, if you went to get a mammogram and your doctor told you, well, you have dense breast tissue, so this mammogram is not going to be conclusive for us, what were your options at that time?
Well, first, I wasn't told that.
I don't think anybody was told
was.
That was
yes.
back in the day. You're
in
exactly
fact,
right.
In 2015, because the belief of Dr. Sledge is that my tumor began to grow in 2012, and they double in size every 6 months. This is what I've learned usually. Standard growth, okay? So 2015, they thought they saw two shadows on my mammogram. I looked at the record. I went back in and got another mammogram. Well, it's unscientific, but people weren't told. And one of the reasons they weren't told is because we did not cover MRIs, which are the state-of-the-art test for women with dense breast. We didn't cover ultrasounds. Basically, a mammogram was what we cover under the law, under insurance law. And that went against science because we have known for sure since 2008 and by 2014, without a doubt, that since close to 50% of the women have dense breasts in this country, they needed state-of-the-art technology to be sure they were safe. And we do not provide it or let the radiologists use it.
Because it's not covered.
Because it's not covered. So
it wasn't covered.
It wasn't covered. And my son, okay, my youngest son, was in a class where they covered this issue and said, well, you have to understand, Mom, the teacher, who's very nice, explained that there is a risk that it was a cost-benefit analysis based on the old cost of breast cancer, the old cost of MRIs. Mm-hmm. And they're much cheaper now. There are short MRIs that are about the same price as a mammogram. But based on that, they said, look, you have to lose some people to keep the cost down of medical care.
Oh, my goodness.
But I was one of the people that was part of this statistical anomaly. And by the way, I'm not alone. We have 25 to 75,000 people who die a year, according to Dr. Lauer, because we haven't changed our laws across the nation. That's one heck of a number. We are allowing this. This is a pandemic, if you want to call it, that we have allowed basically now, since we've had the science for at least 10 years, we are allowing year in and year out women to die unnecessarily simply because we did not make economically possible or part of what is considered to be the norm, giving testing to women with dense breast that would actually detect the cancer.
There's to kind of bring this home, and I was joking with Bert earlier that you and I are going to bond over boobs. That's what we're doing. And I know talking about dense breast tissue is uncomfortable for people, but too bad. So here, just as an example, I was diagnosed twice in 2012 and in 2021. In 2012, my tumor was the size of a pencil eraser and could not be detected on a mammogram because of my dense breast tissue. I could feel it and the mammogram couldn't see it. Now, that is not to say don't get a mammogram. Number one, 3D mammograms were not as prevalent then as they are now. Definitely get mammograms. Definitely do self-checks. Please, please, please.
Yes, yes. So we're not saying mammograms are the first gold standard, first screening.
Absolutely.
First screening tool.
But it
you
wasn't
always
until
get a mammogram.
Yes. But it wasn't until, first of all, my self-exam found it. Then the ultrasound that they allowed me to have afterwards found it because luckily my insurance covered it. It wasn't mandated or anything at that point. But the point is, if not for that second step, it would never have been found. Then let's move forward to the second time I got diagnosed with breast cancer because the second time, totally different cancer, but I was going for 3D mammograms and MRIs every 6 months. And it was because of that, that the second one was detected at a tiny, 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 tiny point, that was super early on. And so the point is, when you say women are dying, the two of us standing here today could have been those numbers had what you're doing not been put into effect.
Well, the idea originally was that I was going to try to be a sacrifice fly since the odds were very – there's 25% that lived 5 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the odds were slim at that time. So we didn't know. But here's the thing I realized – if we could get one law passed that allowed for universal coverage, and by the way, we're one of the very few places in the nation which now provide coverage for women straight down to 18, we could actually save thousands of lives every year in Ohio. And then the question is, what about the nation?
Mm-hmm.
And what I am really glad to say about HB 371, I want to say that is I was amazed. Because what I realized is it wasn't passing at first, okay? We were waiting. We didn't understand why it wasn't going through. So I said, well, I have to go up. I put in a pink outfit that I wear over and over again from like the night. It's a vintage pink, 1950s outfit. Carry carnations. And I found out that every time I knocked on the door of an office, there was somebody in that office who had a relative who suffered from breast cancer, and the entire legislature became my lobbyist. So we had the bill pass, which amazed me. Okay?
Well, it is amazing, not just the impact that the legislation has, but it went through the House with only one no vote.
And 12 hours.
It went through the Senate with only one no vote. DeWine signed it.
Yeah.
And lobbied for me.
And if I'm doing my math right, since it was signed at the end of June, it became the law of the state at the end of September, correct?
Yes.
So for the novice when it comes to how insurance works, tell us what the bill actually does.
The bill.
I shouldn't even say the bill. The law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the law of the state.
What's amazing is the law, which, by the way, not one sentence was changed. It was written by the patient with the top radiologist, really. Annie Brown and Dr. Annie Brown and Mary Mahoney. So it's a bill that was written by people in the trenches. And what it does is it calls for very clear notice when you have breast cancer, when you have dense breast, that is the highest cancer risk you can have. Number two, it allows for universal coverage of whatever is the state of the art at the time. Mm. Okay, screening technique as determined by the radiologist. So it takes the decision out of the hands of insurance companies and others and to the radiologist. And it allows women with dense breasts to have, of course, that screening technology.
So it creates dense breasts as the highest risk?
Well, as a letter, it is the highest risk. It actually is the highest risk, but the letter warns you of that risk.
Gotcha. So you weren't, because that's a great point, because as you said before, women just weren't told.
This one says you have dense breasts, right? This one says very clear, you have dense breasts. It's a risk. You need to talk to your doctor. Hmm. Now, so what it did was it created universal care for a woman. The one thing it didn't have, and we'll go to the national legislation that's coming out, is we would have loved for it to cover the deductibles too, mm-hmm. so that every woman could afford it, no matter where they're from. And we'll go to that next. So the wonderful thing about the bill is that everyone came together, and we agreed in a very contentious legislature that we would get it done in before the end. So by the time we were done lobbying, Matt Huffman called me over. And
Senate president at the
yes,
time?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very sweet to me. And he said, we got two sessions to get it passed, and I hear you can get it passed in less than a day if you really wanted to. And he said, okay, it's a deal. And we started with the Senate, moved to a committee, first Senate committee to the Senate, back to a committee, then back to the House, and then by 7 p.m. that night, it was passed, which was really extraordinary. And I want to thank, really, Gene Schmidt and Cedric Denson for really giving their all to help.
Well, you were smart. You had Cedric Denson, D, Gene Schmidt, R, underlined R,
yeah. Yes.
If we will. And both of them probably very good at getting support.
They are phenomenal, and they are true friends. And again, the thing that we stressed is it's above politics. It's not about politics. This is about, imagine a world where we decided that every other street we would not have a traffic light.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be crashes, and that's really what this is about. Half of the women in America did not know that because they have dense breasts, their cancer, might not be detected, and because of that, we didn't know to. I would have paid out of pocket if I knew there was such a risk. I would have asked questions. Now we know. Mm-hmm. So that will change things. And it was beautiful for me to see because I got to do something good. And I got to know that even though I may not experience full health, perhaps, or a full lifetime, I do know that some woman in Akron, some mother, some sister, some brother in Toledo, they're all not going to experience loss or the suffering that my five kids and my husband did because the cancer will be caught really early, like yours was the second mm-hmm. time.
Yeah. How have you had any communication from other states since this became law?
Well, once I figured that we saved a couple of thousand lives, the next question I asked, and I want to mention this because I have a young human rights assistant named Jared Marsh. And I said, well, don't you think we should go for the nation? And I said, we could save 75,000 lives next year. And so we started to call, and we found out that Congress has been fighting over whether or not women should have mammograms for the last, since 2000. And the big issue is whether you even allow that over the age of 40. And meanwhile, the last time there was a breast cancer initiative was the time of Bill Clinton. So we kept on trying. We called the eight organizations. And one day, Jared says to me, he says, Michelle, he said, because we want to do things for children. We have the elderly. We've got several projects that are really wonderful and waiting. And he said, Michelle, don't you think that this is hopeless? He said, the laws have not been touched in 20 years, 30 years, and they're all as if they don't count.
This person must not know you very well.
So I said to him, I said, well, listen, Jared.
Nothing is hopeless if you're Michelle
Young. Yeah, really.
So I said to Jared, I said, women are dying. I said, 119, I think it's 118 a day. I said, let me take a try and for a few more, and let's see if we get some sign from God that this is worth doing. Well, right after that, my phone, I get a text, and it's Katie Couric. And she says, I need to meet you. I said, is that good enough sign? So he said, okay. So I went to New York. I don't know if you know the story.
I don't.
Okay.
You,
so,
you know,
great.
Like,
this
like a true going. Reporter at the Enquirer, you're burying the lead. We need okay. an editor to sort of like okay. tease us up to the top.
So, so I go to New York.
So you're
before,
like, oh, it's Katie Couric texting me. Hey, Katie.
No biggie.
Yeah.
So
what's
Katie,
going on?
So Katie, so I go to New York and I say, and I have a friend and she says, well, Michelle, it looks like you've been having a one-way conversation with God. You'll know by the end of the conversation if God's answering back. Well, Katie had not told anyone she had breast cancer.
Yeah, just, I mean, just.
But she did
recently.
Tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And that day, as you can imagine, and I promise I won't do this, it was a podcast and I was, not surprisingly, a little verbose. Poor Katie. I mean, I'm with a legend and she doesn't get a word in edgewise. But
that's why I brought
same
Catherine here.
Here. Same here.
Yes, I figured if we outnumber you, we have a shot. So,
okay.
Especially with Catherine.
So Katie says, so when we're at the end of the conversation, I'll give you a copy of the podcast. I tell her the story and I say, Katie, I say, you know, because she saw what I did in Ohio, and I'm going to give you credit with the Enquirer article. She said she'd been following me. And I said, Katie, we have to pay this forward. I said, you're an icon. I said, imagine what you could do. I said, we've got to pass national legislation. Well, okay. Now, meanwhile, I should tell you, meanwhile, and other friends passing around, we also have the Today Show working on this. Okay? And that's another survivor, Kristen Dahlgren. Yep. So, we thought we were over, but actually, I was on national, I had national coverage, and from fellow survivors.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie kept her word. She wrote me a note. She said, well, Michelle, I have met with Congresswoman DeLore. She told me all things she was doing. She said, I will keep my word. I'm taking care of this. So October 17th, this is where it gets interesting, okay? October 17th, 4 years from the date, right? Actually, it was October 18th, four years and one day. Several things happened that day. Over in Connecticut, Congresswoman DeLore saying she was inspired by Katie.
Mm-hmm.
Announced a bill nationally to allow for early detection of breast cancer with MRIs for every woman in the nation, deductibles
wow.
taken care of. And I knew about it, but I had to be here mm-hmm. because coincidentally, it was, according to Hamlin County, it was the Hamlin County commissioners, which was very kind. They had named it Michelle L. Young Day, and Cincinnati City Council was also honoring me. And I thought it must be like a tip of the hat for getting this in motion, and it's now with far better people than me because it's moved to the nation.
Yeah.
So it was a wonderful day, that day, because I thought 4 years from the date, A, I'm not dead, two, I'm still in complete remission, and three, we have a chance to save 75,000 lives this year, and the people who are working on this are really icons of our nation. How fun is that? Can I go now on to other ways we can now? Oh, and now I want to go to the other thing. Cincinnati can get the job done because we still haven't passed it. So I'm going to put an SOS out. Joe Burrows, we need you. I am the Joe Burrows of breast cancer legislation, and we need to inspire the nation that we can solve this problem and that we need this legislation first to save all these lives, especially women who can't afford it. And then second, here's the other thing I learned, and this you will like. Okay, since I've been calling up doctors for my own sake, I met these amazing geniuses who actually, the COVID vaccine came from a breast cancer lab, for example, in Washington State. Others have been working and predict on the program all across the nation of how do we vaccinate women, how do we use immunology to cure them. So if we don't touch anything, Mary Disses, who is the genius behind that whole effort, predicts 5 to 8 years. My Dr. Sledge said he didn't know how long it could be. And I've also talked to others who are really at the top of the field. But if we had a real concerted effort, a true moonshot, my geniuses, okay, the people that write thousands of papers in the whole world, like they're the only pictures in the book, like called Giants of Breast Cancer Oncology. Hard to believe there is a book that has those pictures. They say we could probably cure most cases or create immunization for most women in as little as a year.
A year.
A year.
That's impressive.
Now, the question is how to get that done. You're at the table. That's my next job.
Right.
Okay, that's a doozy.
So you're launching this quest here right now.
You bet I am.
All right.
Because for people like me who've survived, like you, wouldn't it be nice? And what we need to do is create, just as we did locally, a recognition of the need for early detection of breast cancer to save lives. If we could find a way to empower these brilliant scientists who've been working on shoestring budgets, create coordination, okay, of these efforts. Yeah, I think 1 to 5 years, we would be the little city that ended breast cancer. And it would all begin right here. It's absolutely doable. And I can give you an interview with Mary Dices. She'll tell you that. Or with others working on it in every city, it's amazing. And here's the problem, though. Can I tell you?
You can.
We don't care. The federal budget has not been increased for breast cancer since Bill Clinton, in his wisdom, placed in the Department of Defense $150 million a year in honor of his mother so it could not be taken away.
Wow.
That is the breast cancer cure money. We are not funded. And the federal government spends trillions, but there is not a concert program towards breast cancer. Because of that, it's disorganized, it's driven by profits, and it's not driven by the science, which was used for the COVID vaccine and is waiting to just be marshaled towards a cure. So it's just waiting for us if we can find the way. So I'm going to ask you right now, work with me on that. I'd love for you to interview people who are working on it or to help me bring the story out, but it's real. And I was, of all the things I learned, this amazed me, and it also amazed me that women and our suffering is so invisible that not only could we not have our breast cancer seen, detected, or watched because we were told that the technology that we should use is technology that's not appropriate for dense breast, but while doctors were waiting for funding for breast cancer cures, doctors in their 70s, even 80s, who have been the giants of their field, they could not be funded because that cure, that issue is just not on the national agenda. It only comes up when a president has a wife or mother who had breast cancer. Otherwise, it's forgotten as if we didn't exist. And yet, 275,000 women or so will have breast cancer this year. Close to somewhere between 25 and 75,000 will die. They've recorded 50,000. And across the world, it's 1 million. We could change everything this year, and starting right here. So that was my other good news for you.
That's great news. I love when a guest breaks news. And I can see the headline
now
that we haven't written the story yet, but I can see the headline, Cincinnati will be the city that ends breast cancer.
Yeah.
Here's how.
There it is.
And then like second paragraph will be a mugshot of Michelle Young.
Oh. Let's talk about money for a little bit, because let's be fair, a lot of this is revolving around money, whether it's the access for women to have that second step if it's not law like it is in Ohio. But more than that, the negative when people say, oh, do we really need this? That the part about the insurance companies that your son mentioned that the professor said, that if we catch these cases early, those insurance companies are paying less in the long run. There are fewer, you know, radiation treatments and chemotherapy and immunology and all of those treatments. So it's in all of our best interests, truly, to hit this early. And along the same lines, anyone who's had cancer recently knows that there's many times you get your tumor tested by an Oncotype score. So what that tells the doctors is how receptive that tumor would be to chemotherapy. Back in the day, they're like, oh, you got cancer? Throw some chemo at it. Everybody gets chemo. And it was a huge expense for insurance companies. This Oncotype test, which does cost several thousand dollars, but insurance companies are happy to cover it because it takes away the question marks. Fewer and fewer people are having to have chemotherapy, and therefore insurance companies are paying less. So it's better for everyone. And I feel like this is exactly the same
thing. Well, I'll go a step further because cost for diagnosed women 18 to 44 alone is $42.4 billion by 2030. A study from UNC Center for Health Promotion Disease Prevention estimated that annual medical and lost productivity costs associated with metastatic breast cancer in the U.S. totaled $63.4 billion in 2015 and will total $152.4 billion in 2030. We are the most expensive disease, actually, costing billions of dollars in treatment
so
every
year.
So
finding it early or stopping it altogether saves a whole lot of money.
You've got it. Yeah. And I asked the doctors, I said, well, how hard would it be? I mean, how expensive would it be to cure it? And Dr. Sledge, he said, off the record, he said, you got to ask Mary Disis, okay? She's the pro. She's the expert.
And who's
he said,
Mary?
What?
Who is that?
She is the head of the Fred Hutchinson. She is a breast cancer survivor who has dedicated her life to developing the vaccine. Mm. Okay? The vaccines that we use for COVID were based on what she did in her lab. She is the number one expert in the world.
She's looking for a vaccine for breast cancer.
Oh, that's all she does.
Wow.
All she does. Vaccines, because we have several kinds of breast cancer, so you need to have it personalized. But he said, well, he said, take three or four of us to watch it over the program. And he mentioned Mary. There's another wonderful doctor in New York, there's two or three that are the giants of the field, kind of like the Beatles in music. And he said—
The Beatles of boobs.
Right.
Go ahead.
He said, well, it may cost $1 billion because of the testing. He said, the drug itself is very cheap. It'd be the testing that's expensive. Mm-hmm. And I said, $1 billion. But then I looked at my numbers and I said, well, we go through that in a week.
Yeah.
Just treating breast cancer.
Are identified late.
Right. So why? This is a no-brainer for insurance companies, no-brainer for the nation. Wouldn't you like to have all these moms and sisters and brothers of sisters? Wouldn't you like to have entire families stay intact? And wouldn't you like to have the productivity? And as you know, and I know this, once you have breast cancer, you're always worried about when it's coming back. Wouldn't you like to end those worries for the women who are alive? Wouldn't you like to change everything? So, yes, I think we can. It's just a question of how. And, okay, and I threw out the first story, and it reached Katie Couric. So now we've got a second story. Oh, and it reached – wait, let me go. The first story first reached my doctors. Why don't we change this? Then it reached the legislature. Then it reached the governor. It reached everyone, and then it reached Katie Couric and Kristen Dahlgren and the Today Show.
Because they read the Enquirer.
Because they do.
Clearly,
they do.
Yes.
No, they definitely read the Enquirer story on me. And why couldn't we start the ball rolling and find everyone starting to say, wait a minute, you mean we could actually cure this like polio and find a way to do it? I would love that. And I'd love it to have started today with you. Real men wear pink.
I am in pink today. It's still October.
I know. That, we'd love to see that too. That's fantastic.
So on that note of hope and optimism, I want to thank you for coming in today to talk with us. Like I said, a good guest on this podcast breaks news. I think we've got a headline here. We do know our headline. Michelle, thank you.
Oh, I thank you for letting me. Okay, obviously, I'm nowhere if I don't have a soapbox for this. And I thank you for the honor of being able to get the ball rolling with you. I know you're going to do something with it.
Absolutely. If not us, then some huge icon that reads the Enquirer, certainly.
Exactly. Or listens to the podcast. I'm going to send the podcast onwards.
And we'll link to that other podcast. We're going to link to Brooke Sutherland's story that apparently Katie Couric read. So we'll link that all up so our listeners, our audience, our viewers can find it. And we'll have to have you in for an update soon.
Hopefully. When it goes national,
yes.
when it becomes a national law, we'll have you back.
No, we'll have you next to me when it goes national.
I'm there.
I'll take the pictures. Thank you, Michelle.
No, thank you.
Well, if we're looking for a scoop, I think we found it. Cincinnati will cure breast cancer. That's what I'm going with. Clickbait.
We don't do clickbait here.
That is true.
Actually,
that
we
is
do.
True. Do we you?
Do. Yes.
Does it involve chili? Because every time there's a chili story, I'm clicking on
you
it.
You know what? I think there's two definitions of clickbait. One is when the headline teases you to something that's not even really there.
Yes.
So we don't do that.
No.
But do we write compelling stories with provocative headlines that,
yes,
that are going to engage our readers? That's our mission, Catherine.
A good headline, that should not be looked at as a negative. That's
no,
like a super skill.
No, especially when your guest, Michelle, writes it for you.
Yeah.
Cincinnati
yeah.
could be the place that ends breast cancer.
Love it.
I love it. So, Catherine, as we are wont to do mm-hmm. at the end of the podcast, which is named That's So Cincinnati, we often reflect on a moment, an event, an experience that really you can only describe it as so Cincinnati. So since you're the guest host,
yes,
I'm going to ask you, have you had a recent experience where you just, you know, slapped yourself on the head and went, that is so Cincinnati?
I think there's a lot. I mean, if you really start paying attention. But I did experience something this weekend for the very first time, and that was Parents Weekend, or Family Weekend, I should say, at Xavier. My daughter's a freshman there. But what's interesting about that is, like, you know, those of us who've been here for a while, we know Xavier, right? We know the basketball team. We know all these things. But seeing it through another someone's eyes who's not from the city is completely remarkable, because Xavier draws from all over the country. And so, like, as we parked, we would see, like, license plates from Florida and Georgia and Washington State, Illinois, like all these different license plates, because these kids are coming from all over. And their, you know, parents are there, and they're like, what's this Cincinnati chili stuff? Like, well, tell me what this is. And, you know, we went to Muskie Madness, the, you know, basketball, you know, what kind of replaced Midnight Madness. Just fantastic. And I loved it. I loved seeing it not only through, you know, my kids, who I consider like Cincinnatians, and we talked about that, you know, eyes, but also from these fans from, or parents from all over, seeing what Cincinnati has to offer, not just here, but Xavier did a great job of, like, you know, sending people to the Bengals games and down to Finley Market and, like, just different places in the city to kind of get them kind of the flavor of the city.
Well, that's exciting. I think sometimes when you are a working journalist like we are, you cover so much that you don't often take the time to experience it without your journalist hat on.
Yeah.
So you're at Xavier Parent or Family Weekend, and you're not working. You're
yeah.
just kind of soaking it in as a mom.
Yeah. It's funny sitting in the stands at a basketball game, like little things like that after covering teams for so long. But yeah, it's, you know, smelling the popcorn in the plaza before you walk in, those sorts of things. And by the way, if you're wondering, does beer sell on Family Weekend? Oh, but it does. Yes. Everybody was double fisting it. I'll tell you what, these families were happy to see their kids, certainly.
Well, that's great. That I would call that. I think that qualifies as that's a Cincinnati moment. What do you think, Phil? Xavier Family Weekend. Okay. Well,
thumbs up.
Catherine, thank you so much for being the pinch hitter today. I know Sherry will be back next week, but if you are available for guest hosting duties,
yeah,
in the future,
we'd love. Yeah, if you guys have, like, you know, stuff to talk about, Elvis, you know, French fries, you know, all my favorite things, yeah, I'm in.
You know what? Elvis's birthday, I believe, is January 8th.
Correct.
Because
1935.
Mine is the 9th, and I share it with Richard Nixon. And mm-hmm. whenever I look at the list of famous birthdays, I was like, why couldn't I have been the 8th?
Wouldn't that be special?
So maybe on, you know, the week of January 8th, we can have an all Elvis.
I like it.
We'll have to tie it to Cincinnati, though, like Elvis's connections to Cincinnati. There's got to be some.
I'll figure that out.
All right.
I mean, does my Elvis room at my house count? No?
I would say so.
Okay. Well, there we go.
And, you know, that's... You know, when you talk about the fascinating things that people have done in their lives, especially when you're in a new group and mm-hmm. there's like an icebreaker, like stand up and
it's
tell
a great
us something
fun fact.
About yourself that people might not know. Working at Graceland.
It's a fun fact, man.
You have to win every time.
And not to go too far into it, but I'll tell you, that job probably taught me more long term than any job I've ever had about talking to people, dealing with people from different parts of the world, some who didn't speak English, all who were singularly focused on one person, and you had to entertain them at 110 degree Memphis heat. You learn a lot about dealing with people.
You know, that is so funny, because when people ask me, you know, not what was your preparation to be a journalist, but like what prepared you most mm-hmm. to be an editor, like running a newsroom, I have to fall back on my experience as a summer camp counselor.
You have to deal with so many people
taught
doing
me
so many things.
Everything yep. I need to know.
Yep.
I didn't know it at the time, but
I know.
Right.
It's that through line that kind of works the rest of your career.
All right. Well, thank you, Catherine. Thank you, everybody. And we'll see you next week.